At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Here in Lower Manhattan, that's what's happening. This is John Binko on Sports Radio 101.9 FM and Sports Radio 66 WFAN. Flagship station for New York sports. Listen to The Fan anytime, anywhere. Download radio.com app. Favorite us today. If you have Alexa or Google Home, just say play WFAN. You'll be locked into The Fan.
You've forgotten your role with this program? You've been here such a long time. Forgotten what you're supposed to do?
How am I supposed to know when to start? I understand. But you have live guests in the studio, and we're all excited about that. We're all excited about live programming. And just to let the guests know why I'm here, I've been away from this program for quite a while, and I've had discussions with top-level management that we needed a little bit of discipline on this program, and that's why I am here and will be for a number of Sundays in the next couple of months. You better be on your best behavior.
Well, good morning, everybody. That's the voice of John Minko. Remember him? Remember hearing his voice on Sunday mornings? It's been a while. Mink, it's good to have you back here with us.
I'm going to be here Sunday morning. Between taking care of you and Rick Wolf and Baseball Boy,
that keeps you busy right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, Mink is going to keep us up to date on happenings in the sporting world this morning. And good morning, everybody. I'm Bob Salter. It's gotten to be kind of a wet morning out of doors, as Mink said in his top of the hour update. And look at the weather. It can kind of be a little bit tricky in some spots, too. So do take care if you're headed out and about. And we're very pleased that in hour one of our program, we have a live guest who is in studio with us. He's got an interesting background to bring to our discussion. David Allensworth is joining us in studio. He's the owner at Shady Tree Films. He's the director of Soul to Keep. And we're going to find out about this new movie. And it's an interesting story associated with that as well. First of all, David, thank you. It's nice to have you join us on our program.
Bob, thank you for having me.
And also, you made a yeoman's trip, literally, coming in to WFAN today.
Quite
too.
A snowstorm a little north of here. So anybody traveling down into the city today, be very careful out there.
A snowstorm. Imagine that, literally. Hmm. And he came here. Peter, he came here through a snowstorm to come literally to WFAN today.
I had like snow moving sideways in my windshield. I couldn't see the road.
Well, nice to have you join us. I guess a little bit of background in you know, in introducing you, I mentioned the fact you're owner at Shady Tree Films. We'll get into talking about Soul to Keep. Mm-hmm. In your background, how do you describe what it is that really got you inspired to get into making films and directing?
You know, everybody's a different sort. What's in them, what they have in their soul.
Mm-hmm.
Some of us are doctors, some of us are negotiators, some of us are DJs, some like to have a voice. For me, I'm a storyteller, and that's the fire that's in me. And you could tell a story many ways. You can write a song, you can write a book, you can paint. All those things are telling a story. And for me, I fell in love with the idea of telling a story on screen. It's very inspiring.
What's that, realistically, mm-hmm. what's that like when, you know, you start with, I'm going to assume is a germ of an idea, basically.
Sure, yeah.
Watch that grow and then reach the point of a finished product.
It's a journey of change. Because you have that seed of an idea, you get into a script. You're going to rewrite that script several thousand times. And then you get into pre-production, and you're looking for locations, and you find something that kind of then changes what was in the script because now the location's a little bit, got a nuance to it. The bathroom's on the left side, not on the right. And so then you start to have different ideas about that. And then you get to production. And then, speaking about the weather, we had built into this script, we had snow in our final act. We had a major element that had to do with snow. And when we shot, in the middle of winter, upstate New York, where you're expecting it to absolutely 100% snow, like today, no snow at
nice.
All.
Nice.
And we had to scramble and come up with ideas of how to rework that. It was a nice surprise in the film. That we had built into the script. And so it turned into something else that was even more brilliant. So sometimes it just works out that way. So it changes as it goes, and you have to be on your toes. You have to have good producers around you to help you solve those solutions. And then that's just into production. And then you got to get into post-production, and you see your film change even then as certain scenes are not as necessary. You start to cut. You start to see the beauty in a few different moments that you didn't actually see on set.
Mm-hmm.
And you bring those out, especially in performances. We had really great performances from our actors. And they're all up and coming, fantastic young folks. So, and then by the time you get to the full post-production process, adding layers of music, you start to see the tone start to shape into something quite amazing.
What is Soul to Keep about?
Soul to Keep is a horror thriller, demon possession film, where a bunch of kids, a bunch of millennials, I guess we should say, go to a country house that's been inherited by a couple of them, and they go there to party. And they then, of course, while partying, discover something very bad in the basement. A ritual room, and while intoxicated, they decide this is a great idea to go ahead and summon a demon, and they think it's a joke, and then, of course, it's not, and something happens, and all hell breaks loose. It goes south from there. The beauty of this film, though, is that demon particularly is one that some people are familiar with in demonology or Christianity or the Judeo-Christian faith. Is Beelzebub, and he's a very gluttonous demon who just wants to consume everything. So this story is about how Beelzebub makes an effort to consume the souls of these millennials that show up at this country house.
Where on earth did this idea come from?
That's a good question. The original script was a comedy horror by my co-writer Eric Bram, and I read that script, the original one, and it was crazy. Just, arms being ripped off, there's people that were, you know, like one-liners everywhere. It was really a lot of fun. But I didn't want to tell that story. I wanted to tell the scarier side of it. I really wanted to make people feel like they are there and that real decisions are being made. It's not a hokey horror where, you know, you're making bad choices and then you have a one-liner to get out of a situation. No, these, you know, when bad things start to happen, it's one of those, what the hell just, what's going on here? And how do we get out of here? You know? And so, and then a really great thing about it is the decision-making. If one of your friends starts to act crazy, like a demon, and starts to do really bad things, and you can't necessarily leave, what do you do? It's a lifelong friend. Do you think about killing them, or do you find a way to, you know, get that demon out of them and, you know, send the demon back to hell in some spell book kind of way? And so those kind of considerations are in this film.
Now, another aspect of your work involves being involved in working with deaf people. How'd that come about?
That's a good question. Along the way, as I was rewriting the script with Eric Bram, I was reducing the amount of characters. There was a whole bunch. People getting killed off left and right. And I wanted to bring it down to an ensemble cast. And originally, to scare people, I kind of felt like it was a scare tactic. The seed of the idea, like, what if one of the friends was deaf? How difficult would that be to survive? Or perhaps it's an advantage in some way. And I was thinking about Beelzebub, who's consumer of all the senses, and that Beelzebub can't consume the senses of someone who doesn't have hearing. I thought that was really a fun idea. But as we got that into the script, we made another discovery, kind of a social importance, that if this, the character, her name is Tara, played by Sandra May Frank, who, if anybody from New York has seen Spring Awakening, she was the star of Spring Awakening here on Broadway. And that character is the girlfriend of one of the other main characters, and we just thought logically, to be authentic, if she's the girlfriend of this guy, he probably knows how to sign. And if they're all friends for a long time, maybe they all need to know how to sign. And then that kind of thus began the whole, well, this is cool. What if we have a kind of environment where friends include deaf and hearing just because they all have the ability to communicate with each other? I kind of thought that was really, really cool. And as we got to set, it was magical. Absolutely.
And how did you, incorporate, because that's got to be kind of tricky, making that all work.
It was. We had to make sure it's authentic, for these other characters. So these actors did not know how to sign prior to this production. Only one. One was somebody who actually knew how to interpret and happened to be a fine actor playing the part of Freddie. His name is Craig Fogel. But everybody else didn't know how to sign. So we had to hire what's called an ASL master, somebody who can teach and make sure that it is accurate and looking good. So that's something that we had to have on set. And then we had to have interpreters on set to shadow Sandra at all times so that when we needed to communicate with her for every shot that she was in, anytime she wasn't on camera and we were working with her on her scenes, we needed somebody to interpret because I personally don't know how to sign. I learned some along the way, but you know, going into it, I didn't like take a crash course in sign language. I'm now excited about the idea of learning sign language, and my children actually are learning it. So it's a real good outcome of that. But on set, we had to have an ASL master and interpreters at all times.
I mean, in terms of your shots and the like, that it would seem that would be tricky because you're also, trying to make things flow in a certain fashion. But yet, you need the interpreters, to be able to keep the communication going that you need too.
It does slow it down in terms of a traditional set. You have to double your efforts. You have to, you know, talk through an interpreter, and then, you know, they have to then interpret that to Sandra. But they're pretty quick about it. It's really shocking to see how quickly they sign, and it's like when you're hearing another language, and it's just, and you have no idea what they're saying, but they know what they're saying. So their hands move real fast, and it's very emotional, and or I should say emotive. So, but it was an interesting phenomenon on set to watch this happen, and we had to do many takes as our ASL master was also watching the screens to make sure that you could that the sign language was happening correctly, and. That was, you know, an interesting experience.
There's a lot of different elements that all need to come together in this to make it, you know, to make it authentic, literally as the whole production is going to. Because I'm trying to think of this from your standpoint, also trying to think of it from the standpoint of the other actors who are involved in this too. So we get into talking a little bit more about that as we continue in our discussion. We really just started the chat with David Allensworth. He's the owner at Shady Tree Films, Shady Tree Films, that's all is one word, .com, the website, and Soul to Keep. We're going to talk more about that. Soul to Keep, that's Soul, T-O, Keep, movie, Soul to Keep movie, all is one word, .com, the website. It is Sunday morning on The Fan. Good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. Tell you, can you believe that literally I went out, went into another radio station, and came back during Minko's update? I get into more things around here on Sunday mornings. It's absolutely incredible.
It's quite a skill to, like, literally sit down at exactly the right moment and start talking.
Exactly. Sometimes it just works well. Other times, we're in discussion with David Allensworth on our program. David is owner at Shady Tree Films, director of Soul to Keep, talking with us about the movie and talking about this production that was involved. You know, I alluded to something before Mink's update and messages, and that was the idea of, from the other actor's standpoint.
Yeah.
Okay. What was that? What was that like?
In terms
for
of
them. For them, because, you know,
having a deaf actress with them,
that, and, you know, so many people did not know sign language. Okay, it's got to be. Well, actually, let me not put the words in your mouth.
Yeah, I'll tell you this. Once the actors, the other actors, knew that there was a deaf angle as they read the script, they got very, very excited. The idea of learning a new skill as an actor. I don't know if you've ever seen, like, actor resumes, and they put on, I could play basketball, and I do karate, and, you know, they have, like, different things. And now they can, like, they can sign on camera. And they were, so as an actor, they have this, like, you know, desire to expand. And so that was something that they were, that had a lot of energy for on set. Several of them, I mean, they all did just pick it up and took it way beyond what I was expecting of each of their skill sets. I mean, it was, they're just incredible talent. I could speak to one specifically. There's an actor, his name is Derek Long, and he plays the character of Toby, who's this DJ, a different kind of DJ. And he had an emotional scene that we built in from way back when, and even into the auditions, and he nailed it, and, you know, some crying and so on. And when we got to the moment, we shot that, and he insisted, even though it was so emotional that he didn't have to sign, he insisted on building the signing into the emotional moment. And his hands moved, his hands felt like they were crying. I mean, it was like a really cool thing to watch. That's how much these actors were affected by the idea of incorporating sign language into the film.
Now, one thing we haven't talked about is the release officially of this movie.
Yes.
Well, I mean, here you are, you're basically, we're talking about this a little bit before we started the program. It's less than a month away from its quote-unquote official release. Is that
right? That's correct. Yeah.
What is planned?
We are with a fantastic distributor called The Orchard. They cater to independent films, and they have very strong relationships with everything digital, everything on demand. Anywhere you want to go on demand and digitally, you can find this film come April 2nd. Whether it's Google Play, iTunes, Amazon, you name it, Xbox, or on Spectrum, Comcast, wherever it is, you're going to find a Dish even. So it'll be out on April 2nd as far as the official release. We've been in film festivals, and in fact, we have another one coming up in Cincinnati. There's the largest horror convention called Horror Hound Weekend, and I think 30 or 40,000 raving horror fans show up, and there's a film festival included, and we are nominated for Best Picture in that as well.
Really?
Yeah.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I've actually heard of that festival.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's actually a big deal.
It's a big event. We've been working with the fine folks that are over there, and I didn't realize how big it was until we started to research what we needed to do to prepare to go for this convention, and it's fantastic. There's just so much love of the idea of horror, and they just eat it up, and they're excited about our film. We have a good film on our hands, so it's the high production value. We shot in 6K. I mean, you can't even watch it in 6K. It's that high.
Okay. Now, technically, a whole lot of people listening to this discussion have not a clue what that means.
Well, when you watch on your TV or at home or on your phone or on your iPad, you're watching in either what's called 1080p, the screen is pretty good quality, HD, and probably in what's called 2K, 2000, I don't know, totally technically lines per moment. But and some of the better TV sets that you buy you can watch in 4K.
Mm-hmm.
If you go out to the movie theater that's digitally showing, that'll be in 4K.
Right.
Nothing is higher than that. But our quality of our footage is in 6K. A couple of moments were in 5K. We've got, aerial footage, and all that aside, the story is something that is going to carry it, because there's a lot of surprises in this film that take it beyond your format of a typical demon possession film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here we are, less than a month from this officially being released. What's it like? What's going through your head now?
Panic.
Why?
Well, because you want everybody to love it. You do everything you can to get the word out. And still, at that, when it does come out, you don't really know what the reception is going to be. You don't really know how many people are going to download this thing or stream it. You don't know how many people are going to show up at that theater at a film festival. You try your best to hawk your wares and go, guerrilla-style marketing and, get out there on the streets and get on fantastic shows like this to talk about it. But you don't really know what's going to compel somebody to go see this film. I can say that having watched it probably a million and one times, I love it every time. So I know it's a good film. So my assumption is going to be that there's going to be a lot of people watching this film, but still there's a panic because that's what you do. As humans, we get freaked out about the opening of something or your business. If you have a business that you're opening and your opening day is coming up, you're in a panic. You want to make sure it goes well.
But is there a certain sense of, we did this?
I think I will feel that after it comes out. I think that moment comes when there's some results and you say, people are watching this. Hey, look at that. There's these great fans who want more, who want to see a sequel. We have a whole series based on this film that already, lining up in our development process. Beelzebub would be the first one. There's going to be more demons from hell. finding their way to this Earth, and that is going to be the precursor to something pretty big. So I'm excited to plant this seed here now in this film. You go out and see the film, and you see this. We have this fantastic title sequence from we hired a sketch artist based out in Cleveland, Ohio, who is just one of those like comic book type sketch artists. And I had an idea to showcase the evolution or the history of Beelzebub through that has meddled in humanity throughout time. The idea of going back to like Jesus, like and trying to compel Jesus, or the witch hunt, the Salem witch trials, which that actually there's historical reference to Beelzebub meddling in with those women who were accused of being witches. And Beelzebub perhaps could have had something to do with Abraham Lincoln getting shot, you know, John Wilkes Booth influencing what's called obsession instead of possession. And so we have this fantastic title sequence that really takes you deep into what the effort was, has been, and now as you get into this film, this little story about a bunch of friends who show up at a house upstate New York, and the result of which Beelzebub is making its way, his way, to Earth. That's been the effort for a very long time. So I love telling that story and then opening that door to others, and you've heard of like Lucifer or Asmodeus or, you know, Leviathan. You know, like these are names we kind of had in our culture, and those are quite dangerous ideas, and what are they doing? And then ultimately, this isn't just about, you know, let's show how all the demons make it to Earth. It's also how that's going to be counteracted in time by the other side, the God side, the angels, and they're already here waiting for this to happen. So it's going to be this like battle on Earth, God willing, a battle on Earth that we get to showcase and tell this fun story.
I mean, ultimately, what is your hope that, I guess, results from this movie?
I hope that, well, there's two fronts. I want to entertain and impact people from the horror side of this. Exactly what I just talked about.
Right.
The battle of good versus evil and a new way to look at it. And I want people to think about that. And this is, I mean, there's a lot of culture that is behind this, that understands this is a potential thing that could actually happen. And then the other side is, as we went into production with the deaf community, to be honest, let me tell you an experience. We had a premiere out in LA at a fantastic festival called Shriekfest. And it's very like independent film, curated on a level where they're not influenced by anybody else. They just say, these are the movies we want to show. And we had a special screening where we did it in with an open caption experience, as in the subtitles were on screen for a hearing impaired audience, a deaf audience. And they showed up in droves and watched this film. We had a Q&A afterwards and with Sandra May Frank up there. And the absolute gratitude for what we did on screen was worth it. Even after we were done with the Q&A, out in the parking lot, I was surrounded by fantastic people who want to shake my hand to thank me for doing this, because this is something that's sorely lacking in on screen. That why do we need to have a story about being deaf to include a deaf talent? Our story is just that we have an ensemble cast who are all great, but one of them happens to be deaf. We don't overdo it. We just make it part of, because the deaf community is part of all of our community. And that result, honestly, I had left the event. I got into my car and I was shaken. I literally was shaken by that experience, and that was an impact for me and importance of this film, to get out there, to get it to the deaf community. And almost the irony is that this wonderful program, they can't even hear. Like, if there's a way to get the transcripts, I'd like to get it out to the deaf community so they can, you know, read about it and know that we've got them. We want this out there. We want the hearing community, the rest of the world, to understand that this is not that difficult to be inclusive.
That was a question I had based on, you know, when you said that so many people showed up, and my first thought was, well, how'd they know about it? Who got the word out?
We hired a publicist, and worked through the deaf community as well to find people. And also Sandra May Frank has a following in the deaf community, and she helped us get the word out as well. So everybody has someone that they know that is either hearing impaired or deaf. And there's a million deaf people in the United States, and there's 10 million that are significant hearing loss. Our own producer, Matt Meyer, has significant hearing loss and tinnitus as well. And the wife of my co-writer, Eric Bram, is completely deaf in one ear and has significant hearing loss in the other. And so it kind of hits home. We all know someone.
All right. We're going to talk more with David Allensworth, who is the owner at Shady Tree Films, director of Soul to Keep. He's our guest in this first hour of our program this Sunday morning.
Radio.com.
It's Sunday morning on The Fan, and good morning, everybody. This is Bob Salter. We are in an interesting discussion with David Allensworth. He's in studio with us. He's the owner at Shady Tree Films Incorporated, director of Soul to Keep Movie. That's all is one word, .com, the website, shadytreefilms.com. Also another site on the web to find out more about David's work and find out information about the movie itself. A lot of things I want to ask. One thing I've neglected to do, though, is to mention if some of the folks who are listening to us maybe are on point with some of the things we're talking about, might want to throw in a question. You certainly can. 877-337-6666 is our number here at The Fan. I want to pose a question based on something that you mentioned when talking about this showing and presentation in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And having significant numbers of people from the deaf community come out.
Yeah.
You said there was a Q&A that took place.
Yes.
With Sandra. What was the intensity of that like?
From our point of view or from the audience point of view?
Both.
As soon as we got up there and we discussed a lot of what we just talked about here on the show today about mm-hmm. the process and what it was like on set. And as soon as we opened it up to the questions out in the audience, probably about 12 hands, maybe more, a dozen to two dozen hands popped up.
Mm-hmm.
And they all wanted to not only be thankful for this experience, but they wanted more. They wanted to express that there's a major need to include deaf talent in movies and TV shows and so on. But that we were extremely authentic in the presentation of not only Sandra May Frank's character, but all the characters around her that felt like they were all varying levels of understanding the language. Because not everybody who's a hearing person is going to, you know, be completely fluent. So you could see on screen that some were a little more relaxed about how it goes, and they felt that was really brilliant, that, you know, everybody's a little bit different. So they even caught up on all the nuances. So the energy of, you know, their questions to us was very apparent just by the fact that they were so specific about what they liked about the film.
And one of the thoughts that was expressed basically in our last break actually came from the gentleman who is at the controls today, Peter Kennedy, asked the question. He asked you the question. I want you to address this on the air because I thought this was an interesting area. He had watched the trailer for the movie and was very impressed by that. His question was, how much of a role did silence play in this production?
Silence actually was when I mentioned earlier on the show about the seed of the idea of having a deaf character. I wanted to play with the scare tactic. Mm-hmm. Silence is a big deal in a horror film or a thriller when suddenly you are from the point of view of someone who cannot hear. We reflect that entirely in production. A fantastic sound designer, Angela Panetta from Panetta Studios. And we played very carefully in our some of the scary moments to literally wipe out the sound. And in fact, there's a really great scene, you'll have to see it for everybody listening, where where Sandra, there's a party going on, there's a lot of noise, a lot of pounding music. Of course, she can't hear it, she feels it through a balloon, okay? A lot of the deaf community, when they want to hear music, they hear it through a balloon, through the vibration of a balloon. They hold their hands on the balloon. And this character, something happens in the film that's very loud, and an attack from, I guess, our demon. And she feels that, so she goes off to investigate that sound. And as she goes off on her own into the darkness, into the dark hallway, and we play with the sound. As it becomes her story, we suddenly cut it out, gone. And we suddenly understand that she's not intimidated by the sounds of the world. She's curious about them. And that is actually one of the first moments that you find that she becomes a hero. You know, it's hard to tell in an ensemble cast who's the protagonist. And she starts to become that character from that point forward. That actually her deafness is an advantage in the story. So, the play of sound, of course, we had some scare ideas. She can't hear what's happening behind her is a fantastic scene where somebody is being attacked behind her and she's in the foreground and you're watching her not knowing that all that is going on behind her and that person's trying to warn her. And she's not budging. And you're like on the edge of your seat going, just turn around. And that was part of the idea originally, even before rewriting the script into this more horror thriller idea. So that one actually survives all those changes that occur from development into distribution. That actually survives all the way through. So I'm really, excited about that.
And Peter, I hope did I do justice to your question?
Absolutely. It was perfect. I think of a horror. I think of intense moments in a movie like Interstellar when obviously so much goes to the sound of the moment. Mm-hmm. And then silence ends up being just as strong, if not stronger.
Just as loud, for sure. Yeah.
By the way, I should mention the fact I haven't done this thus far. Usually I do this. I almost feel like I get overwhelmed with this. It's 6:49 here on The Fan because the time – the clocks went ahead an hour. We moved into daylight savings time because it'll be light longer. Clocks ahead an hour. If you didn't do that before you went to sleep last night, good idea to do that and catch up on things at this point, too. David Allensworth's in studio. He's the owner at Shady Tree Films, director of Soul to Keep, talking with us on our program on The Fan this morning. When we're talking about Soul to Keep and talking about your work, what would you say also to somebody who is listening to our discussion today who maybe they've had an idea for a movie? Listen, most of us have walked around with an idea for a movie. Believe me, I got about five, okay? About five different ideas. Yeah. One of which I really personally think could be a blockbuster. Okay, but then again, that's my belief in it. Somebody is interested in this field.
Yeah.
What would you say to them about what it's really like? And perhaps what could you say to maybe inspire somebody who's looking at this as possibly a career?
That's a great question. Like almost any field, it's very difficult to accomplish certain goals. Filmmaking, you have to raise money. And
oh, that's got to be easy.
Yeah, geez, it is absolutely the hardest part of this entire process. And our producer, Matt Meyer, who I mentioned earlier, is a huge part of how that actually happened. So thank you to Matt on that one. But you cannot convince anybody of giving you money to anything, but especially about filmmaking, unless you have certain key elements going in. You have to have passion for what you do.
Mm.
If you want to get into this, you got to have, you know, you have to be passionate about this idea, Bob, whatever this blockbuster is, you got to be very passionate about it. And you have to have persistence. You have to keep at it because there's going to be a lot of people saying, no, I don't know. Or they might say yes for a moment, but they don't actually, you know, come to the table. But even when you get the money and you get to move into production, you got to continue with your vision. That's actually part of the pitch. You have to have, you know, vision for what you do, for what your idea is in telling your story. You have to be able to convey that vision to others, whether it's the money people, to the fantastic crew that you hire, to, you know, your assistant director, to the other producers, to the gaffer, to anybody. You're obviously the director of photography. Everybody, your vision with your composer. We had a great composer on our film, Irv Johnson, who's like the music, despite having a deaf character in this, the music is so good that you almost want, I hope that we get the chance to have an album out so that we can, you know, have people buy this score. But that came through conveying the vision, that he was on the same page of that vision.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last thing I would say, if you want to get into this, just throwing one more thing here, is that impact. You got to have some kind of impact on your audience. You have to go into it believing that you're going to impact them in some way. If you just want to entertain, that's an impact. You let people escape their life for a moment and entertain them, whether it's a horror or a comedy. You know, we've got all kinds of productions that we're developing at Shady Tree Films, even a faith-friendly project. Anything that will have an impact on your audience is going to help drive their interest because that's one of their takeaways. So vision, impact, persistence, passion. You put all that together, and I'd say you've got a very good shot at getting something done.
And when you talk about that idea of the passion, as you were saying that, I'm thinking, is that a difficult thing, though, to transfer in terms of your passion to somebody else?
It is, if you're not passionate. That's really true.
I set you up on that one. Yeah, okay.
You know, you have to convey your passion. You know, if you're not passionate about something that you want to do, then how are you going to get anybody else to be passionate about it?
Mm.
You have to show them that this is really cool. This is something you really want to do. You can't go in and say, look, I got this idea. It's a demon possession film and some crazy things happen. And no, it's like, hey, I got this movie where not only is a demon possession film, but we have a deaf angle that you've never seen before. And we've got surprises in the film that make you want to see the film again from a second point of view because you didn't see it coming. It's one of those things. And even in the very end to survive, there is going to be a survivor. I'll give that away. Someone is going to survive this film, and how this person survives is really great. And when you watch that and you say, I got to see this again. So those who are going to stream this or download it, do it again. I guess you can watch it within the same 24 hours and watch it again because it's the same, you know, price of admission, I guess. So I would do that. And then you say, oh, all those clues were in there. And I missed that. And I love that feeling of doing that. And so there's my passion for the project. And it makes people say, yeah, okay, let's do this together. And so that's how we got really talented people to be involved on an indie film that had a low budget But we shot it like it was a multi-million dollar film because we had people believing in that project, the story, the passion that I had. Mm-hmm. And I also have to give props that I have a co-director on this film too that helped understand, because I had never done a feature film before. So my co-director, his name is Monier, he had a really dark tone to him, and he brought all this kind of, you know, technical wealth and keeping it kind of dark and gritty. And, you know, props out to Monier about that too. So, you know, but it, you know, the seed of the idea came through me. So that's, I guess that's why I'm here.
Mm. Most interesting idea. Certainly congratulations on, you know, the effort that you've put into this thus far. Yeah. And reaching this point and being really on the precipice of its official release and yeah. all the excitement that's got us around that. David Allensworth is in studio with us. Owner at Shady Tree Films, Shady Tree Films, that's with an S, all is one word, .com. The director of Soul to Keep Movie, that's all is one word, .com. Thank you very much. Certainly good luck with Soul to Keep, and certainly good luck with your continued and future works as well.
Bob, thank you so much for having me on the show today, and I look forward to coming back again for another project.
Excellent. We look forward to that, too. And certainly travel safely, too. Hopefully it's a less eventful trip back from WFAN today. Thank you. We're going to take a pause for our top-of-the-hour look around the sporting world with Mr. Minko. Another guest is going to join us as we continue on our program on The Fan this Sunday morning.
At Lowe's, this Veterans Day and every day, verified military members, veterans, and their spouses get automatic silver status in MyLowe's Rewards with free standard shipping, plus 10% off eligible purchases with no annual limit. It's one way we honor and give back to those who have served and still do. Learn more now at Lowe's.com/military. 10% discount can't be combined with another offer. Exclusions, terms, and conditions apply. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Whatever happens today, take it on with a fresh cup of True Brew Coffee. Now only $1 with True Rewards. True North Store's True Brew Coffee is a hot, flavorful gourmet blend created from coffee beans from around the world. As a free True Rewards member, pick the size that is perfect for you and pay only $1. Don't have the True Rewards mobile app? Find it in the Apple or Google Play Store to download and save instantly. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
On the job, every minute counts. That's why Lowe's now has ProBlock Quick Dry Primer, expertly manufactured by Sherwin-Williams. Engineered for pros to dry fast and go on smooth for virtually flawless results that keep your job moving. It's available in oil and water-based, and getting it is easy. Order online by 2 p.m. and get free same-day delivery right to your job site. Lowe's, we help, you save. Orders placed after 2 p.m. will be delivered next day. Valid in select zip codes, subject to driver availability. More terms apply.